Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike DeTeo along with Charlie Long at 540 for our triple option feature. Steve Geller will join us. Want to tell everybody, New Orleans Pelicans basketball right around the corner as the Pelicans kick off the regular season tomorrow night against the Chicago Bulls in the Smoothie King Center. So catch the Pels versus the Bulls, pregame at 6:30, tip-off at 7 p.m. tomorrow on the Big 870 WWL, WWL.com, and streaming live on the Odyssey app. So, man, middle point of football, we got the basketball cranked up, so we got all kind of sports juggling across the board. Charlie kind of gave you the rundown. We'll talk a little bit more about Saints rosters. But last night, major development with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers late in the game. You saw it. Chris Godwin, he reminds me a lot of Eric Martin, who was Bobby's favorite target playing in the 80s and early 90s with the Saints, goes down with a dislocated ankle, out for the year. And in the news today, and we knew that Mike Evans was fighting a hamstring injury, but that now will keep him out until after game 11, and then the Bucs have a bye, and then he has a chance to return. Come on, you're not the same team without Chris Godwin and Mike Evans at wide receiver. You might say next man up. There ain't no next man in the zip code on that roster today of Chris Godwin and Mike Evans. There's nobody in that area code on that roster today. Man, that's a major blow to the Buccaneers. That's awful to see Chris Godwin go down the way he did. And, man, you just saw a little bit of the replay of it. I saw it more online than the television part, and that's an ugly injury. And you feel bad, Chris, because this is his money year.
Right.
He's going to be a free agent next year, and this will be a recovery time probably until March before he's fully recovered at least from the dislocated ankle. And now with Evans down, this game is about attrition. And you know when you get on that field, you take that shot that you could get seriously hurt. And he got seriously hurt last night. It does affect your football team. And, you hear the coach say it and players say it. Oh, it's next man up. Okay, tell me who the next man is on that roster.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at the rookie Jalen McMillan and Sterling Shepard and Trey Palmer. Like, come on, man. It's Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. That's their passing attack.
Them two dudes can play.
They're dogs. I mean, that's a great 1-2 punch. They're fantastic. And Chris Godwin, you feel awful for, specifically, as you mentioned, the contract year situation. And a good dude as well, Mike.
I was telling you this. Elaine Heitnik, who used to work in Baton Rouge, she's working now in Tampa, and she's told me, Mike, he's so great for the community. He gives so much of his time and his efforts and money to different causes. He'll go to schools on his day off. And come on, that's not a lot of guys that do that. I know Cam Jordan does. He does a lot of that.
Yeah.
Here in the city and surrounding area, that's not a lot of guys. You know, they want to take that day off, kind of decompress and everything else from a season. And so it would be like you getting off a Saturday or a Sunday. What do you want to do? And Chris Godwin's been a good dude for the Tampa Bay community. And one thing I know is he's been a Saints killer.
Yes, he
has. Good Lord. He's put up some unbelievable numbers against the Saints. And he's not the biggest, fastest guy. Eric wasn't either. It was his ability to get away from heavy traffic and his running skills.
A great yak receiver, Mike.
Because Eric was a former running back at LSU. And in high school. And then he transferred basically to be a receiver. Godwin played a lot of running back in high school too. And you can see that he's got that in his background. And Mike Evans gives you that big, tall, rangy guy, short yardage, red zone. That's a big blow to the Tampa Bay Bucs.
And here's what else, Mike, is, as you mentioned, Evans is expected to be out until at least the bye week, right? But their next three games before the bye, and we'll get to pick six in a little bit where we'll talk about Falcons and Bucks. Atlanta's favored by 2.5 points for a quick preview of that, by the way, in Tampa Bay. They host the Falcons. They go to Kansas City to face the Chiefs.
Yo.
And then they host the 49ers. That's their next three games. And you're doing that without your two-star receivers for your passing attack? That is tough. And look, I know that the 49ers are dealing with plenty of injuries themselves. And
everybody is.
Yes, correct. But at the same time, that is a tough three-game slate to be running into without your top two guys.
The worst thing in the world, Charlie, for any coach, and having done this almost 40 years, is to get multiple injuries at the same position. Okay, now you lose your two top receivers, you know, and for a period of time. At least Evans comes back later in the season. It's not going to be the case with Chris Godwin. So, he's one of those type of opponents you never like to see on the schedule. You know he's a tough guy, great player, and he makes things happen. And even you saw the disgust in Baker Mayfield of taking his helmet off and just slamming it against the turf. He sort of knew, man, what? We got to finish this without Godwin. And again, you there's nothing you can do about it. Nothing you can do. Now, I think they're going to have to go outside the organization to try to bring in a receiver that can help out. And this is why the Marquez Valdes-Scantling situation comes into play here, because I think had this happened and Scantling hadn't signed, man, the Bucs are on that line with him. And, you know, one thing with Marquez, he's consistently inconsistent. He's a 6'4" receiver, sub-4.4 guy. He catches the ball better than he did before. In college, somebody sent me my write-up on him. It was like, Mike, you would never more write about a receiver. He was a bit of a body snatcher with the Packers. He lets the ball get – now, he's become better out front, but he's inconsistent catching, and his route running, he sort of rounds off some routes. Also, too, he got a bit of the dropsies at times. That's why he's played – for Green Bay, Kansas City, Buffalo.
Right, because the talent's there, but, I mean, it's inconsistent, as you mentioned. As far as receivers that are kind of becoming available, Mike, a couple guys stand out. Cooper Kupp has apparently been put on the trade market, according to some reports. The Rams are looking for a second-round pick for him. That's one of them. And then you're looking at potentially at the NFC South. Did you see what Deontay Johnson had to say after the Panthers got absolutely smacked
by
the Commanders?
I want to get out, too, if I'm him.
He said, quote, "I can't play every position on the field."
That was, he got that right.
Yeah, no kidding.
And there's no way the Panthers would trade him to Tampa.
No, that's true. I mean, you're right.
You're not
interdivisional trade, you would have to overpay, for
my
sure.
My thing is, hey, you know, I'm not going to help you any way you can, but I think Deontay is going to be moved.
Deontay is going to be moved, but potentially also Cooper Kupp, depending on if a team can reach that price tag. We'll have to see. But
because his salary is fairly rich.
That's true.
So to speak. And so you're going to have a little bit of salary cap room to fit him in. Cooper Kupp, when he is healthy, he is a dynamic receiver. Problem is, man, the last year and a half, Charlie, he hasn't been able to stay healthy at all.
That's been the issue with the Rams this year.
The Rams have been ravaged, too.
So many squads.
49ers, Rams, and now with the Bucs, you know, with their two starting receivers out, Godwin for the year, basically 4 weeks.
And I just read to you those next three games. The Buccaneers right now, after getting shellacked, and I don't care what the final score said, with their little mini comeback there at the end of the game, they got smacked by specifically Lamar Jackson. And in the second half, Derrick Henry, woo-hoo, King Henry was running all over them. They got smacked and beat down at home by the Baltimore Ravens. They're not feeling good about themselves. They lost their top two receivers. Mike, the Bucs are in trouble over these next three games.
When Derrick cut the corner and had that long run, Bobby texted me and said, "Man, Mike, you were right about the King Henry. He can still motor.
He's a joy to watch. You're talking about
a 6'3", 250-pound man. You saw cornerbacks. They weren't catching up with him. It had to angle him to get him out, and I think he sort of ran out of steam a little bit along the way.
It was that 81-yarder that you're talking about, Mike, and the only way that the cornerback was able to catch him was because he had the angle from the opposite side of the field, and he just barely caught him, but it took him, basically flipped the entire field. Derrick Henry, when he gets out in open space, it's a beautiful thing to see.
No, you're making a business decision.
Oh, yes, you are.
Rich Marty and I, we did TV with Bob today, and he was like, "Mike, I heard what you said last night," and he said, "You're absolutely right. The only guy I've seen in his 30s be that productive," and Rich got to play with him, John Riggins.
Okay.
With the old Washington Redskins. Man, Riggins, he got picked the same year as Archie Manning. Look at his stats in 1983 and 84 as a running back. I mean, he tilted the field. And them Hogs helped him too up front. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTellier along with Charlie Long in studio. And it's Tulane Tuesday, so we'll go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line with the head football coach of the Tulane Green Wave, John Sumrall. Tulane Tuesday is brought to you by Bayou Black Electric, your electrical connection in the heart of South Louisiana. Learn more at BayouBlackElectric.com. Coach, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. And you can't say it, but I can. Man, Rice, you know, they were much tougher opponent than you. Yeah, I think we sort of figured they would be when you got in the ring. But it's all about W's. And I got, you know, friends of mine and also family members that are coaches. They say, man, I love wins, and I love when they leave me a little meat on the bone so I can get on them about what they did wrong.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong there. We knew going in, I had a lot of respect for their coaching staff and the way their kids prepared and played. And, you know, last year's game, we beat them by a whopping two-point victory, you know. And so I knew going in it was going to be a hard-fought battle. I told our team that. And to be quite honest with you, last Tuesday, a week ago today, we didn't practice very good. And I told our guys post-practice, I mean, guys, this is how you prepare to lose, not how you prepare to win. And like I said, they're well coached. They got a lot of pride. I think they're an outfit that's really disciplined and detailed, and they gave us fits, and we didn't play our best. You know, we dropped what are probably two touchdowns, had a couple other drops that are going to be explosive plays in the game, and had some serious critical missed opportunities in the pass game, and just looked a little sluggish coming out of the bye. We didn't look crisp, didn't look sharp, and we have to get better faster. It won't go very well for us this Saturday coming up.
Coach, you talked about missed opportunities, which you had. Also, too, I thought Rice, from pass coverage, they gave you a couple different looks there that maybe Mensa wasn't quite sure with. Did they throw you something out defensively you weren't expecting?
Yeah, they did a couple of things that were more unique already that we knew they did, they could present some problems, and they changed a couple things and did some things differently that maybe weren't characteristic of what they always do. And so they had some good game plan stuff for us and a good plan. And so, yeah, I think they did some things that challenged us. And like I said, you know, that's going to happen week to week. What can't happen is us dropping wide open touchdowns.
Exactly.
You know, and we got to fix that. And so every week you're going to have something that they got ready for you that you hadn't more maybe worked on as much, that's unique or different. But we have to execute and worry about we're in control of and be better at affecting the game positively on our end.
Coach, when things don't go right in a passing game, you know, they can just turn around and hand it to the big guy. Your running game got really cranked up in the second half, especially late in the third quarter into the fourth quarter. And, again, man, you can run the football, stop the run, and you win in a lot of games in this league. I don't care where you play. That's still a big part of the game about running the football and stopping the run.
Yeah, it's one of our keys to victory every week. It's actually the first one is win the run game. And this four-game win streak we've got currently, we've won the run game every one of those games. And to have Mekhi Hughes in the backfield, you know, the drive in the fourth quarter we went down to score, it was a seven-play, 70-yard drive where all seven plays were runs and five of them were to Mekhi. And man, he's a comfort blanket, so to speak, for us. I mean, he's a guy that got a whole lot of confidence and turn around and hand the ball off to him when things aren't going great in a lot of areas. And when you can win the rushing battle, you usually have a great opportunity to win the game for sure.
He's a workhorse, Coach. I mean, just call it what it is. At this point in the season, 744 rushing yards on 136 carries. But as you were mentioning, like when you weren't having much success in the passing attack, I mean, Mekhi Hughes, 27 carries in the game. You just gave it to your guy. But also him getting, you know, honored by the AAC. We got this from the presser emails as well. It was part of their weekly honor roll. So, you know, Mekhi Hughes doing it on and off the field. Great stuff from him. And just the season that he's having so far and what you're expecting from him moving forward.
Well, yeah. You know, he also had our two offensive touchdowns in the game were his. He had the screen pass in the first half and then the fourth quarter run. And I think what you said, calling him a workhorse, you couldn't be more spot on. You know, he's one of those guys, he gets better as the game goes. You know, there's some of those backs that their style of running, they just wear the other team down a little bit. And that's sort of how he plays the game. The more carries that he gets, the more opportunities he can get to just lean on the defense, and maybe he's a physical runner, you know. And so that helps him. He's a guy that, man, the more touches we get him, the better off we are. And like I said, he gets better as the game goes for sure.
Coach, I'm going to ask you about the health of the team. I get this text every week right before I have you on. I don't know. Maybe this dude got money on the game and think he can get a little insights. I don't know. But tell us a little bit about your health as you gear up to play North Texas.
Yeah, so we were down last week. We had cut with a couple starters. Alex Bauman, our tight end, was unavailable for last week's game. And Caleb Ransall, who starts for us at nickel, who's a high-level player, he was also unavailable for last week's game. Both those guys were fully available at practice today. Both are trending like they're going to be able to play on Saturday, which will be big-time helps because Alex is good in the run game blocking, but he's also a fantastic pass catcher. He's a real vertical threat in our pass game. And then Ransall is usually a guy that, you know, we feel like it has a good matchup for an opponent, whoever their best receiver may be. And so having both those guys back available this week is what it looks like, and that'll be nice to get them back because we need both of them to be ready to go.
Coach, before we look ahead to your upcoming road trip, I wanted to talk about the defense in the second half because Mike talked about how the rushing attack really got going in the third quarter into the fourth quarter. But the defense, after, you know, Rice ended up tying the game at 10, I'm going to read you these possessions as you already know, but an interception, 2 3-and-out punts, a turnover on downs, the scoop and score, and another interception. The defense, we've talked to you about this before, Coach. At times they've been kind of up and down, but it seems like when you needed them to play their best, they really locked down Rice and kept them out. Well, while the offense was, you know, they had their issues in this game, they took the lead and the defense did not give it up.
Yeah, I think the defense has really kind of started to hit its stride a little bit, you know. The you know, probably the most understated thing about this team is that we only had what I would consider maybe three or four defensive starters returning, you know, and in game one, 7 of our 11 starters on defense weren't on the team when I got here in December. They were guys that we had to go out and bring them in. And so it's a group that really the first few games, to be quite honest, was trying to find itself a little bit and trying to find some cohesion. And then really through the Louisiana Lafayette game, that's after that game, we didn't play very good defense in that game. And then really you hit the South Florida, UAB, Rice stretch. And we all of a sudden, I think are starting to play as a unit better, not as 11 individuals, but we're playing as one a lot better. And that doesn't mean we don't have areas to fix, but I think you're starting to see that group elevate its play. And it really starts with our linebackers on that side of the ball. I mean, Tyler Grubbs, you know, he had an interception on Saturday. Sam Howard almost had an interception, but he did have 2 fumble recoveries, one for a touchdown. Those two guys really, man, they're thermostat guys. They set the temperature. You know what I mean? They don't take it. And they set the tone of the team, and they're the guys that really turn the heat up and they hold the standards high with the rest of the guys on that side of the ball. And it's been fun to watch that group get better these last few weeks and kind of start to maybe identify what we're about on that side of the ball for sure.
Coach, one quick question before I ask you to give us a little preview of North Texas is for people who haven't watched Sam Howard play, because we know a little bit more about Tyler Grubbs, but, man, Sam's a playmaker for you on that defensive side to football. He is a really good football player. Good athlete.
Man, he is. He's a guy that loves football. You know the old commercials with Terry Tate, office linebacker?
Yeah.
You know, he's got a little bit of that in him. He comes into our meetings. We have, you know, we'll have a 7:30 AM team meeting and he'll come in the meeting fully dressed with his helmet on for practice. And I'm like, hey, man, practice it for another hour, bro. Like, he's just such an intense guy. He prepares extremely well. he doesn't know anything but full speed. You know, I mean, some guys, like you tell guys all the time, I'd much rather have to tell you, whoa, 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 than giddy up. Well, I never have to tell him giddy up. I have to tell him, hey, man, this is a walkthrough. Don't tackle the guy. But he's just such an intense competitor, a great leader. He holds the standards for everybody around him. He's a guy that's accountable to himself. Therefore, he can make other people be accountable. And so he's been a tremendous addition. Him and Tyler Grubbs, man, they play so well together. And I think they probably spend almost like 90% of their time awake with each other, because anytime I see one of them, I see the other one. And they're almost attached at the hip. And those two guys, man, they're really leading our football team and leading our defense for sure.
Yeah, they're your Batman and Robin on defense. A little bit of a preview on what we expect when you play North Texas.
Well, they're explosive offensively. They've got a top 10 offense in scoring offense and in yards per game right now in all of college football. I mean, their lowest scoring total of the year was 21 points against Texas Tech. And they scored 35 in another game. And then the other five games they played out of the seven, they scored more than 40 points. In a couple of those games, they scored 50. And so, man, they are explosive. Chandler Morris is the starting quarterback, Chad Morris's son. Chandler was a starting quarterback at TCU at the start of the year when they went to the national title. Now, he got hurt early in that season, but he was the guy that won the starting job in training camp there. And they got a little slot receiver named DT Sheffield, number 10, who's I think he's got 10 touchdowns, 11 touchdowns. He's got a bunch of touchdowns. I mean, he's a human joystick, man. He can move and shake, and he's got all kinds of short area quickness. He's a handful. People haven't. Last week's game against Memphis, first play of offense for North Texas, DT Sheffield, 75-yard touchdown. Next drive, second possession, second play of the game, DT Sheffield, 75-yard touchdown against Memphis, who's got good players. And so this guy, man, he can take it to the house from anywhere on the field. And like I said, they're scoring a ton of points. We've got to get some stops, and then we got to score. I mean, we ain't going to win this game 10-7. You know what I mean? This game ain't going to be a rock fight like last week's game. This week, we got to be able to go out and move the ball and score the ball, and we can't kick field goals. We got to score touchdowns in the red zone. And this outfit we're playing offensively, man, they're not good. They're great.
Coach, for the guy that keeps texting me about health issues with you, after hearing you, you might want to take the over on this game, because I think I know his angle.
The over definitely hit in Memphis last week, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I don't know what the number was, but they scored over them in Memphis was about a 100-point ball game last Saturday.
Coach, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Always appreciate your time and insights, and good luck this coming Saturday against North Texas.
Thanks, Coach.
Thank you, guys. Y'all have a great day. Roll wave.
All righty. That was Tulane head football coach John Sumrall. Tulane Tuesday is brought to you by Bayou Black Electric, your electrical connection in the heart of South Louisiana. Learn more at BayouBlackElectric.com. We'll be back with more sports talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long in studio. Charlie, this coming Saturday, man, LSU, Texas A&M. This is like a playoff game already for both teams. Both of them got off to difficult starts. Man, A&M, they got run over by Notre Dame. And LSU, man, spit the bit in the fourth quarter when they had a chance to beat them. And, man, USC right now, they lousy.
It's looking like a bad loss.
Oh, man. But both teams now have run it since then. And I think this comes down to, can LSU's defense continue to make big plays if it's Whit Weeks, if it's Braden Swinson, Savion. The secondary's gotten a little better. But, man, it's been the play up front, that front seven, that has really stuck out to me. And, you know, it's hard to say this, but, you know, when Harold Perkins went down, man, you lost a guy, and you understand his athleticism, his speed, his ability to rush the quarterback. All of a sudden, Whit Weeks went from, what, a backup player, so to speak, to a quality starter, to, he looks like an all-SEC guy in less than a month. And can A&M make plays in the passing game with quarterback? I think that's the key. Can LSU affect him throwing the football? Because when they've got good, they're not to be great, and they're not going to get great, but if, when they've had good quarterback play, they're difficult out.
So, yeah, to your point about good quarterback play, Mike, they got terrible quarterback play in that game against Notre Dame in their opener. And I think a lot of that maybe had to do with Connor Wegman, their starter, being sick. And you could obviously tell he was not 100% in that game. But ever since then, A&M's offense has been rolling. They've averaged 34.5 points per game in their six-game winning streak. Coach Kelly talked about it in his presser on Monday, saying how balanced their offensive attack was, you know, pass and run. While Wegman's missed some time, he's still a very talented QB. He hasn't had the best year in the world. Le'Veon Moss, their running back, has been awesome
this
year.
He's sort of been the erratic guy. But really what's better than I thought it would be, their running game.
Well, their offensive line has been playing really well, Mike. Really? That was another thing that Coach Kelly really highlighted and said, that they're playing well as a cohesive unit. And that's what you need for a college offensive line, obviously. But they're playing well in pass pro. They're playing well in run blocking. And their rushing attack has been really good. He kept calling it a balanced offensive attack. That's what he kept saying, that it's not, you know, one thing or the other. Whereas if you look at LSU, obviously Garrett Nussmeier and the passing attack has taken precedence over the running game, even though Caden Durham is really picking things up. And, you know, the rushing attack against Arkansas was excellent, probably their best game all year on the ground.
And their best game stopping the run.
Correct, that as well. But as far as, you know, he always says that you got to make teams one-dimensional. And for LSU, in my opinion, for this upcoming game, and we'll get to the preview when we do pick six, Mike, if they get out to a good start, like they did against Arkansas, and force A&M to kind of move away from their run game a little bit and make Connor Wegman be the guy and have to throw the ball 50 times per game in that game, I think LSU's in good shape. But they got to be able to get off to that fast start. And to do that, you have to obviously execute offensively against a tough Mike Elko coach defense. They're fundamentally sound. But you also have to be able to play good defense early on, too.
Yeah, I think one of the things when you have two teams of this ilk playing one another, you know what it comes down to? How well you tackle on defense. Because both of these teams have explosive offensive players. And you get them out in the flat, it might be a five-yard gain. All of a sudden, it's 15-20. That is something LSU defensively has got to continue to get better at. And they have with Blake Baker's defense. They've tackled pretty well in space.
Yes.
Now you're going up against athletes with A&M. Come on, they got better players on offense than what Arkansas does or what South Carolina did. And so, you know, Jackson Dart is who he is, and Trey Harris is a top-flight receiver. But A&M's got a bunch of receivers too, and it's their ability to make something happen after the catch. Or you hit the line, what could be a 3-yard run turns into a 33-yard one.
Yeah.
I think open field tackling is key to who wins this game. And for LSU, really, it's to stop the running game and say, Connor Wegman, beat me throwing it if you can.
You got to make him one-dimensional. I'm right there with you, Mike. If Connor Wegman throws, let's say, 35 to 40 passes in this game, I think it's a big win for LSU. I think it's a win for LSU. I 100% agree. Now, that's not to say they don't have weapons in the passing attack like you were mentioning.
Yeah, they do.
Noah Thomas is a big dude, Mike. 6'6" target. Sorry, got 289 yards on the season. And obviously, you know, with that kind of frame, you expect him to be a red zone threat. 3 touchdowns as well. But Le'Veon Moss is the one that I really want to highlight. You know, we talked about Caden Durham's surgeons, but he's still hovering around 60 to 70 carries so far this year. Moss is at 105 already. And he's at 674 rushing yards, 6.4 yards per carry, and 8 rushing touchdowns. That's a dude. If the front seven for LSU can keep him kind of bottled up, and you've seen how well Greg Penn and Weeks have played together, but also the front that you mentioned, Braden Swinson and Savion Jones, who have been the highlights off the edges, if they can really kind of keep the rushing attack contained, that's how LSU can win this game in College Station.
Yeah, Moss is going to get his yards. Okay, but you got to limit the explosive plays he's capable of having, because that he's been able to do. Okay, he's going to get his yardage, but I don't want that 3-4 yard gain to become 13 and 14. That's how he sort of catches you. He sort of lulls you to sleep.
He is a patient back, Mike.
A vision. Man, I tell you what, Charlie, I've seen him in a couple games and watching film. He run up right up the backside of a lineman. He waits a second, and then he decides, do I go left or do I go right? Yeah, I see that a lot. Well, I brought that up to Herb about a little over a month ago. He said, Mike, that don't happen in college football. He told me, man, I see it now more and more. They run almost right up the back of a lineman. I saw Caden Durham do it three times last week. Right up the back of a lineman, and then he decides, do I go left, do I go right, and take off. Moss did that too early in the season. Exactly that. So you get lost in the shuffle as a back. Okay, you got all these big linemen. Where is he? And where is he going to come out? Is he going to be to my left or to my right? It is something that's a little different. They don't stop. Le'Veon Bell, you said, man, he did it as well as anybody.
I was about to say the exact same thing. It's all the kids that grew up watching Le'Veon Bell and how he ran for the Steelers when he had that great offensive line, and he would just let the blocks kind of accumulate in front of him, and then he would find the space.
Stop.
Yeah,
sometimes,
exactly.
Or a shuffle of the feet, and then he would take off. Man, that's some skill to do that, to be able to do it. But Moss, I think, is a real quality back in the SEC. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelje along with Charlie Long. We'll tell everybody, one of our favorite guests is coming on at 520, Mark Schlereff. Talked about the NFL, and I want to give you this. Mike Bonnet from LSU Sports Information gave this out. LSU this year has only given up two sacks all season long. Both those sacks were against South Carolina. It was like, watch out! Man, because those guys coming off the edge, every snap, they were giving some heat to Nussmeier. LSU has gone without allowing a sack in seven of his last eight games. Only Army, who has thrown 56 passes all year, sometime LSU almost get that in one game, has given up fewer sacks than LSU this year. So, man, that offensive line, from a pass protection standpoint, is getting it done, and Garrett's like, man, I'm getting rid of it.
Yeah,
and
but
fast.
You're out to get rid of it fast against Nick Schwartz and Shamar Stewart this week.
That'll be important. We'll be back with more Sports Talk right after this news break.